The Athletic FC Podcast Network.
Hello, I'm Taylor Payne. Welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your forever bursting bubbles Newcastle United podcast from The Athletic FC. I've got two lovely chaps with me. George Corkins here. Hi, George. How are you?
Well, I'm walking on with hope in my heart. That's what I'm doing this good. Week. I didn't have hope this time last week, but I do now. So I'm good.
There's a sliver of light,
yeah,
isn't there?
No, just I'm feeling good. I'm feeling positive.
A little sliver of light.
Not confident, but I'm feeling hopeful. And that's a nice way to live your life, I think.
It is, absolutely. Jacob Whitehead, how are you feeling?
Hello, I'm good. So I was wondering, after being at West Ham yesterday, if we should have some sort of, well, not a light show, because obviously primarily an audio format, but some sort of flashbang wallop.
Would be wasted, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of health and safety implications around having a bubble machine?
It's a very strange thing, isn't it? It is a very strange thing, that.
It is.
Yeah.
We've got lots to talk about, chaps, so let's crack on. Why not? Weakest horribilis, I think we should call it.
So we're starting with the bad stuff, are we? Is that the...
Yeah, we'll get it out of the way.
So we're going to take each other apart and then we're going to build ourselves back up. Is that the way we're doing it?
Rip off the band-aid.
Right, rip off the
by
band-aid.
By the end, we'll be stronger as a whole.
Okay, I do want to just want to repeat that. I mean, I hope you're not going to send me spiralling, you know, back to last week's depression here, but no, I mean, Newcastle, to the surprise of absolutely nobody, did not appeal the Anthony Gordon red card. I mean, yeah, it was totally fine for them to reserve the right to do that. Eddie Howe said straight after that game that he'd not seen it back. But obviously, once he had seen it back, he then realised that there was absolutely no chance of getting that rescinded. So they didn't do that. So, you know, it's a huge blow. 3-match suspension. Of course, the most... the important of those is the League Cup final, but no, I think that was the logical decision, wasn't it?
Jacob, reason to be fearful, number two. Lewis Hall ruled out for the rest of the season with a foot injury picked up against Liverpool. He's going to need some surgery on that. It's not great news.
It's really devastating for him. He's been one of Newcastle's players of the season, especially after some of the difficulties he faced last year. To be able to entrench himself in this Newcastle team, he's earned England caps and it's really changed some of the way that Newcastle play in terms of their balance on each flank. And obviously it's really sad for him missing the first cup final of his career. It's a blow for Newcastle because they're now pretty light at left back. They sold Lloyd Kelly for PSR reasons. At the time you sort of thought he's not getting much game time. That's okay. Hall is set in stone. But now they're going to have to shuffle over Livramento, or maybe they'll move over Burn or pick Target in some games. It seems like it'll be Livramento for the cup final. But yeah, it leaves Newcastle short. It's really sad for Lewis Hall. And it's really tough to put a positive spin on it.
And the accumulative effect of that, of course, is that it means that Newcastle's entire left side is disrupted, is changed. So you've got Hall, you've got Gordon. It was only a few weeks ago that we were talking about just how important those two have been in terms of being an attacking outlet for Newcastle. A couple of years ago, it was the right side. It was Trippier leading things on that side. You know, Newcastle's kind of great threat has come down that left side. It's been a real source of positivity for them. There is no sugarcoating what a blow it is to lose both of those players. And, you know, that partnership, it's been a potent partnership. So, yeah, I'm sure my reaction was the same as yours, Taylor. As Newcastle fans, it's like, oh, right, here we go. I mean, it's like Gordon was the moment you go, here we go, right, okay. And then Hall happens and it's...
And then it starts, doesn't it?
And then it starts and you're... Well, yeah, it's like it's happening all over again. Newcastle United, happening all over again.
It's happening again, yeah, exactly. Sven Botman as well, George, we have to mention that one, don't we? Out for 8 weeks, potentially, with another knee injury, also requiring surgery. It's the opposite knee this time to the serious ACL injury from the back end of 2023 or early 2024, depending on how you look at that one. But, yeah, Sven Botman missing as well. We were all looking forward to him coming back, weren't we? And we wanted to see him back in the team, so it's really, really horrible news.
Yeah, and he came back into the team at the turn of the year. That was a kind of surprise seeing him in there, and you know, did a good job. had that impact. He's come out of the team. Obviously, Newcastle trying to sort of protect him. He struggled a bit after being out for so long. And this is a blow sort of in a different respect. I think once you have the Gordon and Hall situation happening, it's like, okay, then, so where does that leave Newcastle? What are the options moving forward? And of course, one of them would have been to do what they did against Arsenal in the second leg at St James's and possibly go three at the back. That option, certainly with Botman being one of the three, was then sort of ruled out. And again, you know, the blow here is it's a big blow for him. It's a kind of it's that sort of knock on effect. It's Gordon, it's Hall, it's Botman. It's
just relentless, isn't it?
Honestly, if it was if we'd been recording this pod last Thursday, which would have been a really stupid thing to do, by the way, because the West Ham game wouldn't have happened at that point.
Very true.
But if we'd been doing this pod then, I would have said, give Liverpool the trophy, I'll take a 1-0 defeat, and we can just call time to all of this pain right now. Let's just not put ourselves through it. That's fine. We can just move on now. And that's just how it felt. Botman himself, he replied to somebody's message on social media, Instagram, sort of saying, you know, talked about him being injury prone, and he reacted very strongly against that. We know what a classy player he is. 8 weeks, it does more or less rule him out for the rest of the season. You know, again, if you put that on top of the long absence before, it does mean that potentially he could come back right before the end. But, you know, the key thing is for him to get fully fit over the summer.
Is it worth rushing him back?
Yeah, coming back at the Sven Botman we know and love. You know, he's a fabulous, fabulous, fabulous footballer. So, yeah, send him and Lewis Hall all our very best wishes.
Absolutely. To top off the misery as well, season tickets prices have increased by 5% for the third season in a row. Darren Eales described the decision as reluctant, but some fan groups have been very critical of this, Jacob. Rising prices in football, I mean, it's a story as old as time, isn't it?
We know football's too expensive. If there's ever complaints about St James's atmosphere, then the price of football and tickets is a large part of it. I get that there's a dual imperative. Newcastle need to grow revenue. Their argument is that they want to raise ticket prices and therefore make more money, and it'll help grow the team and the club in a longer sense. That said, it's all very well and good wanting to raise revenue and raise ticket prices, but ultimately, there's an element to which you're trying to protect the soul of the club. We all like sitting here and laughing at Jim Ratcliffe about how much he's cutting Man U, raising ticket prices. At the same time, if that's going to happen at Newcastle in terms of raising ticket prices to an extent that normal fans are priced out of it, like, what price success, ultimately?
It doesn't have to be the way, George, does it? I mean, West Ham are one of the clubs who've frozen ticket prices this season.
Yeah, and others have. And, you know, I think we talked a year or so ago, maybe a little bit longer, that certainly some within the Newcastle hierarchy have been keen for the club to make a point to sort of say that, not that Newcastle is completely separate from the rest of the country or different to other clubs, but, like, you know, this is an area that struggles financially.
Yeah.
And that with the ownership they've got, there is an opportunity to sort of make a point about ticket prices, and they haven't done that. And I do think that is a big missed opportunity from the club. And 15% over 3 years is actually a very steep rise. And, you know, at the moment, things are good with the team, you know, back challenging again towards the top of the Premier League and in a cup final. But, you know, it is a really delicate balance, and you do not want people to be priced out from following the club. And,
absolutely,
you know, there's huge demand for tickets at the moment. There's huge demand for season tickets. And what you don't want is for the club to take advantage of that demand. And I think this is really on that line at the moment.
I think we need to remember as well that following Newcastle inherently is also more expensive than following other clubs, like, because of the club's geographical location. Yeah. Away fans, they're being stung more for petrol, for train tickets. It'd be nice to see an element of that.
It's a great shout, Jacob, in this week and all weeks. You know, you've just been to West Ham. It's Monday night. It's impossible to get a train back from London after that match, you know. So for a lot of people, that mean an overnight stay or travelling through the night. That has a knock-on effect for work. And then they've got to do it all over again on Sunday. I think it's disappointing. I do understand the balance. I do understand the need to raise as much money as possible in this PSR landscape. But I just think it was a missed opportunity. And as I would always do, I would urge supporters, fans, to check out the Newcastle United Supporters Trust.
Yes.
It's you know, it's not just in bad times that we need organisations like that. We need them all the time to be able to sort of have a collective say. And yeah, they've been pretty strident on this, so fair play to them. But yeah, it's disappointing.
It certainly is. More on Darren Eales later, by the way. But let's get into the West Ham game after a quick break. So, chaps, West Ham United 0, Newcastle United 1. If the Brighton game felt like Liverpool at St James's February 2023 all over again, this was an altogether less dramatic and more encouraging prelude to a cup final. Eddie Howe celebrated enthusiastically after the final whistle, George, didn't he?
It was a big celebration, wasn't it?
It was.
On the touchline, yeah. And I do think that was interesting, and I do think that was quite telling. Now that we can begin the process of building ourselves back up after that slightly deflating start to the pod, but we're doing things in the right order. Yeah, I think that was a big moment. If you look at Newcastle's recent results, it was 3 losses out of 4, and the fourth game was a win, but it was that win over Nottingham Forest that Eddie Howe said afterwards felt more like a defeat. So if you want, we can say that's 4 defeats in a row. You know, not really, but lots of questions around the team, questions about form and fitness, and obviously Gordon's suspension. Newcastle needed a result. They needed a positive result. They needed something to build on. They needed to show that potentially they had answers to the problems that had sort of been mounting up, and they got it. It was not fun to watch. It honestly wasn't. But ultimately, you take a step back from it and you say, that was a really good away win. Like, not pretty, not fun. But clean sheet, 3 points, and something to build on, and a lot of the ugly stuff. And yeah, him saying that that was one of the best wins of the season, not in terms of performance, but in heart and desire, I totally agree with. It means we can now look forward to the weekend with positivity, and as I said at the start, with some hope. Because I think if you reverse it and say Newcastle had lost 1-0 last night, they'd be ninth in the Premier League, and I think the mood around the whole team and club would be very different. So, really good. I'm glad I don't ever have to watch that match again. But,
yes, absolutely.
You know, really important.
The first time since 1952 that Newcastle have entered a cup final, having won the match before.
Good Lord.
It lost the previous...
Holy hell.
Lost the previous 4.
Everything
is falling. Get the engraver's tools out.
Suddenly, everything is
falling. Get the black and white ribbons out. That's astonishing. Eddie Howe had some decisions to make, didn't he, Jacob, before this? Harvey Barnes gets the nod at left wing, and Nick Pope is brought in nets.
Yeah, I'd say that Harvey Barnes is probably the most, in a way, surprising one, given that this is his first start for 3 months. Obviously, when you pay the sum of money, which Newcastle did for Harvey Barnes, you are expecting him to play games. He's been a sub a lot. He is, in theory, the next man up on the left. I just thought that... I suppose the danger is looking too far ahead to Liverpool based on the West Ham game, but I think lots of people are sort of considering that the team which he picked for West Ham was almost a dress rehearsal for Liverpool. I think for me it would have made a lot of sense to have Willock and Joe Linton rotating, bringing that energy. But Barnes, I think he justified the questions which would have been asked about him in terms of sometimes the danger of Barnes is that he can be quite peripheral, and he really pursued involvement. He had lots of chances in the first half.
He's popping up in dangerous areas, wasn't he?
Yeah, and I think with his first effort, more of a half chance, he didn't do that well. With the next two, he did well to get shots and targets, and then he did create the key moments of quality early in the second half, which Eddie Howe drew attention to post-match. So I think a good showing from him. Nick Pope, to be frank, didn't really have much to do. But he's proven his class for Newcastle over the last 2.5-3 years. He wouldn't have said this has been his best 2 months of the season, but...
He had a couple of moments where he came out of goal and headed the ball away, and every single part of my being was just on edge, just thinking, don't do that again. In the second half, he came out and cleared a ball with his head, and I was on the edge of my nerves, I'll be honest.
He hasn't looked... I mean, so I think in previous matches... it's just looked like he's struggling for fitness. I mean, it's, you know, that rustiness.
Confidence as well, maybe,
yeah,
George?
Yeah, absolutely. Form and fitness. He's just sort of, there's been a hesitancy about him. Now, I don't think that was there last night. As Jacob said, he wasn't really tested. So it's sort of difficult to judge. But I do think that, you know, that clean sheet is vital for that reason. It was their first clean sheet since mid-January. That last clean sheet was against Wolves. That was the final game in the, you know, 9-match winning run that Newcastle did in all competitions. Just really important that they got back to that sort of solid base. And, you know, I think the thing with both that and Barnes is that it's going to be very different against Liverpool on Sunday. We know it is. I mean, so like West Ham, after the first couple of minutes, effectively sat back, and Newcastle was sort of being challenged to break them down. Now, like with... absolutely agree with what Jacob says about Barnes. He isn't going to impact a game in the same way that Gordon does, because Gordon runs at you. He's a constant irritant. He's a menace. He can take the ball up the pitch, but he presses. He presses hard. He presses high. He is much more involved. I mean, it sounds stupid, but if Barnes isn't creating or scoring goals, you don't see him. You don't see him do those things. He's not that same kind of player. But I do think it was important that he was able to show that he could have an impact and that he could create those chances. And Newcastle spent a lot of money on him. He hasn't been the player that we wanted to see, partially because of how good Anthony Gordon has been. But yeah, that felt really important that he was able to do what he did.
Part of me is wondering with Nick Pope if there's rationale for picking him against Liverpool as more of a big-bodied goalkeeper, given the size of Liverpool's centre-backs. From set pieces and the like, does it make more sense? Have, you know, is he being picked for pretty specific reasons? If it is a toss up in other areas between him and Dubravka in form, this is my latest theory.
I like it. JWT, Jacob Whitehead theory. I like that.
Yeah, it's worth keeping an eye on.
Get it on a polo shirt.
This wasn't classic Eddie ball, George, was it? Lower energy than usual. In fact, a friend of the podcast, NUFC Threat Level, dropped me a text message last night and said, third gear maximum this. And I have to say I agree with him.
Well, ultimately, Newcastle didn't need to be more than that. I mean, I suppose I would say that. Yeah. I mean, the first 2 minutes was pretty scary. It has to be said, West Ham had those two really good chances. Livramento was kind of like all over the place for both of those early chances. For the second one, Dan Byrne takes a swipe of the ball. It kind of cannons away, could have gone absolutely anywhere. Comes off Alvarez, I think it was, and doesn't hit the target. You know, at that point, you're thinking, oh my God, this is awful. But West Ham didn't capitalise on it, and they sat back, they drew back. Now, that sort of high-energy game wasn't really appropriate because it's sort of, you know, if your task is to get beyond, you know, 10 outfield players who are effectively sitting behind the ball, it sort of changes. And so you have to be patient, you have to be deliberate. Let's be honest, it was awful. I mean, most of that first half was really awful.
Oh, it was turgid stuff, wasn't it?
You can see that West Ham aren't very good and don't sort of really have a cutting edge. And you can see that Newcastle are absolutely groping for any kind of form. You know, it's human nature to be thinking about the cup final. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to get injured. You don't want to get hurt. They've got all these things going on in the head, but they powered through it. And I do think that there were moments of aggression. I think they were the team that were showing those aggressive moments. Great seeing Joelinton, you know, adding that bite and sort of anger in midfield. And Bruno getting everywhere across the pitch. I do think they were the more aggressive team, which was encouraging. And ultimately, Newcastle had enough and they did enough to win the game.
We said before, Jacob, Harvey Barnes got the two big chances of the first half, but the goalkeeper was there both times, wasn't he? Areola's probably the Hammers' best player, and that save in the second half as well was absolutely sensational. He's got no right to keep that out, has he?
No, I mean, for me, I was in quite a good angle for that, and it just looked as if it was going to droop over him. So, I mean, it was a cross which was driven in, looped off Kilman, and looked to just be dropping over him. But it's a proper sort of reach over his own head, claw it out.
So far behind him, wasn't it?
Scooped it out, didn't he?
Yeah.
Scooped it away.
But yes, he was the best player because West Ham were really tepid. I mean, you could tell that this was a team who don't have much to play for in the season. I mean, they had nothing at stake and played like there's nothing at stake. Newcastle sort of know that there's everything at stake coming up and played with that weight on their shoulders. I was quite pleased actually at how they got Joelinton into space a couple of times, around the corner, which sometimes they struggle to do. And finding those spaces, I thought, was quite a good sign. But this is a very niche point, but one which I think does show good elements of good build-up play and form before the weekend.
Harvey Barnes, George, provided the goal as well, didn't he? A cheeky little nudge from Alexander Isak on Kilman, who was blown out of all proportion by West Ham in the post-match interviews. It's clever forward play, isn't it? That's what we're going to call it, clever forward play.
Yeah, and I think it was the opposite in terms of Kilman. I don't think that was clever play from a defender. I don't think it was clever defensive play because he went over way too easily. I think there was contact, but not enough to overturn the referee's call on the pitch.
Similar to the one at the Emirates on Odegaard in the semi-final. Yeah. Isak gives him a little nudge and the ball runs through.
Yeah, I mean, however many times you watch that, I find it very difficult to look at it and think that that was a huge travesty for West Ham, I have to be honest. Yeah, and so Barnes, it was actually his second attempt that kind of got Bruno in. It was a good ball, and then a great finish from Bruno, who was excellent, I thought.
Yes, he was, wasn't he? The captain deserved his goal, Jacob, much more like the Bruno we know and love.
Yep, he was, as George alluded to earlier, he was the Newcastle player who was really still happy to stick his foot in, make a challenge. In these sorts of games, yes, there's a cup final, but you do need to play with an element of risk, a calculated risk, but you need to actually put yourself there, because otherwise just sitting back, waiting and being static can lead to freezing. He deserved his goal. There's a couple of gorgeous passes in the first half as well. He created the first, created Barnes' first two chances, I think, with sort of slip balls through. Nice to see him hitting his straps.
Yeah, and, you know, there've been a lot of questions about Bruno and his captaincy this season, and we know that he's not been in the best form recently, but I do think that was an important performance from him, and I do think that was a captain's performance as well in a different way. I do think that on this occasion, it's the match before the cup final, I thought he led by example. He showed that you can still be aggressive, you can play well, and I thought his interview after the match on Sky was really good as well. He didn't attempt to shy away from the fact that the cup final had been on people's minds. He didn't shy away from talking about what it would mean to win the cup final, as Jacob wrote in his excellent piece about the match. You know, he talked about it being like the World Cup final for Newcastle. He didn't downplay any of those things. He sang in front of fans at the end. It was a really good night for him, and I thought he led by example, and then he spoke by example too. I think that was really encouraging. One thing that we haven't kind of mentioned in any of this is that Newcastle got through the match without any injury,
as far as we know,
you know, which is kind of, again, also really important. And whilst we're talking about players who led by example, just a word for Kieran Trippier, because I thought he was really good too. Not flashy. He's not the kind of player who's going to win a game for you anymore. I mean, he can still obviously take a really good set piece, but I just thought his on-field captaincy, as it were, his leadership was really important, and he's got a big part to play on Sunday.
He certainly has. It was a fairly sedate ending to the game, Jacob, wasn't it? More due to West Ham's lack of cutting edge than Newcastle's efforts.
I think that's maybe a bit of a harsh reading. I mean, I made this point on Twitter, I think, that Newcastle shut it down well. Like, West Ham didn't have a clear shot and goal. It's all well and easy to say that's because of West Ham's lack of cutting edge, but Newcastle's job is to blunt that. Yes, we know that West Ham aren't great, but
kept them at arm's length, didn't they?
It's pretty sedate. I appreciate I don't have a Newcastle heart rate, but like, they didn't get that close to scoring. Like, yes, it might get cleared to them a few times at halfway, but you know, it's not. It's hardly Jeepers Creepers.
We had a. This is what Pod on the Times Blue Sky account posted, approaching injury time. I think we might be the most infuriating side in the world when you just need to hold on to the ball for 2 minutes.
So if you do have a Newcastle pulse rate, Jacob, you would have found yourself screaming at the television, why are we giving the ball away? And no, I mean, so it was just those couple of moments in the last 2 minutes where you're screaming at the players to take the ball into the corner and just shield it for a moment.
I swear that when Sean Longstaff played that short pass, I heard the entirety of Tyneside go, "Sean, man!"
Yeah, all there was the that. There was that moment as well, wasn't there? I think it was Tonali. I mean, it was like a progressive idea, but he tried to play a pass through in the final couple of minutes, didn't he? I can't remember who it was for, probably for Wilson. He tries to play a pass through and it was like,
they're going to score. Just wasn't needed.
If you're getting this stressed over the final 5 minutes at this game, what's it going to be like if you're holding on to the lead next week?
Exactly.
Like, just how...
Now you're getting a nice problem to have.
Can we hook you up for like the good of science or something?
Do it.
It's probably an alternative to like solar power or wind or wave or something.
Pure anxiety energy, basically. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
You're getting it now, Jacob, definitely. Back up sixth, 4 points behind Forest in third. George, is it on?
Well, I think it's really important. Again, I sort of touched on this a little bit. If you reverse it and say that Newcastle lost last night and they're back down in ninth, I think then if you go into Sunday, lose that match, there'll be so much sort of angst about the direction of the team, direction of the club. Whatever happens now on Sunday, Newcastle's season is still alive. I'm not saying it wouldn't have been if they'd lost last night, by the way. It's just, it has a very different perspective. I just think it's to be sixth, to be level on points with fifth place Manchester City, probably good enough for a place in the Champions League, fifth. And to be ahead of those teams, I just think it's a really big statement. So, yeah, very positive, very encouraging. And you can't summon form out of nowhere. You can't summon momentum out of nowhere. It has to start somewhere. And it started on a Monday night at West Ham, awful place to watch football. And it was, you know, it wasn't great. It wasn't beautiful. It wasn't wonderful. It was ugly. It was tough to watch, but Newcastle got through it. It's a massive 3 points. It's a massive clean sheet. There are causes of positivity. Chris wrote a piece at the back end of last week and he was like saying, you know, okay, this has been a week of blows, but you've got to take stock, and less hope is not the same as hopeless. You know, it's not. And all we have now is Sunday to look forward to, and we should be looking forward to it, knowing that if the real Newcastle turns up, then they've got a chance of beating Liverpool in the cup final, and we don't need to feel sorry for ourselves. Let's just feel hopeful.
Come on, you Maggies.
I saw a long-anticipated media scrum with the chief exec finally arrived. Darren Eales sat down with the media. George, health is good, apparently, and the search for his replacement is underway.
Yeah, it's important to kind of start with this. Obviously, there was an announcement back in September that Eales had been diagnosed with a chronic form of blood cancer, and he's kind of working his notice, but he said that he was doing well. He was very keen, very eager to say thank you to everybody, had lots of kind of good wishes, obviously, as you'd expect. And it's kind of business as usual for him. You know, the club's ownership are kind of going through the process of identifying a new CEO. We don't have any more information on that at the moment. And Eales is kind of concentrating on making sure that it's a smooth transition.
PIF, as majority shareholders, are fully committed, apparently. New training ground is required, and they know that.
Yeah. So there's some sort of interesting things to talk about. Ultimately, these things are just kind of words. Let's be honest. It's man says words. But I think having been on that away day with Yasser Al-Rumayyan, the governor of PIF, the Newcastle United chairman, there has been a slight change in tone, and it has been a more positive change in tone. There's been a bit of uncertainty about what happens next for the club. Now, that's partially because in terms of the big infrastructure projects, they just haven't happened. It takes a long time for these things to be set in motion and then to be acted upon, but certainly in terms of the new training ground, that was something they'd narrowed down sites a couple of years ago, and then everything seemed to go quiet. Same with the stadium. It's taken a very, very long time to sort of get into this position. And again, on the stadium, it was sort of not the can kick down the road, but they're still not ready to kind of make a decision. There have also been reports that have kind of come out of Saudi that PIF are focusing or refocusing their attention on Saudi. In other words, not selling investments abroad, but concentrating on internal investment. And that's been a bit of a narrative that's been going around Newcastle for a year or possibly more. And that has sparked, you know, concerns internally at Newcastle about what was going to happen. Now, I think those concerns have been allayed somewhat, at least, by what happened in this meeting. And it was interesting, I thought, that the Eels was very bullish, saying, quote, "We're an ambitious ownership group that is looking to drive Newcastle to be sustainable, to compete for trophies, and ultimately we want to be winning the Premier League." On the training ground, he said that they absolutely recognise it's something they've got to do. To get to where ownership wants to get to, we need to have a new training ground. So again, I think there's some sort of reassurance. It has taken a long time to do it, but again, it felt like a recommitment. The same with the stadium. We know it's a hellishly complicated situation that the clubs are in, but behind the scenes, there is huge excitement about the plans that are there. They think that it's going to be a game changer for the club, and he, i.e. Eels, absolutely reaffirmed that PIF are fully committed. That was the phrase he used. Yeah. So fully committed to the long term. The future is bright.
And there was praise for Eddie Howe as well, wasn't there?
Yes, absolutely. And again, that might feel like a statement of the obvious, really, except that, you know, we only have to go back to the summer and the bumpiness that there was there in terms of relationships at the club. Amanda Staveley and Mirdad Kadusi left the club, incredibly close allies to Eddie Howe. Paul Mitchell came in without his knowledge. There were, you know, there was that sort of very difficult first interview that Mitchell did. And Howe talking last summer about, you know, needing to feel happy, needing to feel content. The relationship with Mitchell has certainly settled down, albeit it hasn't been tested in a transfer window that Newcastle have ended up doing positive actions with, because they haven't signed a player for the first team for three windows. But I think Eels saying that we're delighted he's with us and hopefully he's going to be with us for a long time is very important. I would, just to be slightly self-referential, I want to point to an interview I did with Matt Ritchie, which has gone up on The Athletic this week. It was such a pleasure to do that. I could easily go on a Maisie Dribble talking about that, but I had like 2 hours with him. He's wanted to do an interview saying goodbye to Newcastle since the moment he's left, really, but it sort of typifies him that he wanted to wait until he was impacting things at Portsmouth and that he was settled there. Loved hearing him talk about slapping his own teammates and, you know, how that was born from just enthusiasm and excitement. Love, really. Anger was his way of showing love. And the way that he continued to sort of drive standards in training, even though he wasn't playing every week. I love him as a kind of character and a footballer, that relentlessly positive thing. But the reason I'm bringing this up now is that he talks about Eddie Howe changing the trajectory of his life. And just very interesting insight into Eddie Howe, the head coach, but also Eddie Howe, the person, giving all players who have kids who work under him a copy of John Wooden's book, Pyramids for Success. I mean, what did I read when I was a kid? What did I read as a kid?
The Hungry Caterpillar, maybe?
The Hungry Caterpillar. I got Spot the Dog and The Hungry Caterpillar. Newcastle players get Coach Wooden's Pyramid for Success. Amazing. But he was so sort of enthusiastic about how, and I think in a quite sort of emotional bit, Matt said that Howe talks about missing Richie's relentlessness, but he says that relentlessness, it just came from him. It absolutely came from him. And one thing I'd like you to look out for this week, doing a big piece on Howe and the sort of quiet revolution that he's instigated at Newcastle, with lots of contributions from different people, including more from Matt Ritchie. So brilliant. Please keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, check out both of those pieces from George. Jacob, the club accounts were released and made for some positive reading on the whole. Revenue almost doubled in the last 2 years. Player sales helped as well. Best return in six. It should be a significant summer transfer window off the back of all of that.
They were broadly positive, you're right. This is quite a change in tone from the start of the show. One of the encouraging things is how sort of spread the growth has been. It's across all three major income streams, which is useful. It shows it's not been too reliant on a single source. commercial returns massively up. Obviously, they've been doing big deals where with the likes of Adidas. Those are starting to come home. I think player sales is the best return in 6 years, but equally we know quite how much of a panic that was. That's not necessarily sort of organic player sales. That's sort of rack them up and get them out player sales. But it starts to get Newcastle better at that process. They do have sellable assets now. There's no reasons why that can't continue. Reading them really does show quite how close to the line they were last year. But because of that growth on the commercial side, they will have money to spend in summer. And that's partly, the justification for not spending in January was to not harm the summer transfer window. They stuck to that plan, even as it must have been difficult to lots of times. And they will hopefully now be in a position to take advantage of the market in summer when it is much friendlier for doing business.
We won't be talking about who wants to buy Alexander Isak, definitely not. But Jacob, you and Chris joined IO on the Athletic FC podcast earlier this week. If you're interested in that sort of thing, potentially a new contract in the offering?
Whenever on podcasts now, people are asking to commit to Alexander Isak statements. On the Athletic FC, they're trying to get me to sell him to Arsenal the whole time, which me and Chris resisted. Of course, Newcastle want to sell Alexander Isak to a new contract. Who wouldn't? I mean, these sorts of things are slow. They take time.
Yeah.
Isak will know that he ultimately has leverage in his position and lots of it will come down to the end of the season. But he's under contract for a while yet. I mean, Newcastle want to get it done, but it's not any sort of panic stations right now, I'd say. I mean, George will also have some insights on this, I'm sure.
I mean, it was interesting seeing some quotes from Wayne Rooney around the West Ham game. Now, Isak had a very, very quiet game at West Ham. I'm sure Newcastle fans were delighted seeing him come off before the end, wrapping in cotton wool, for God's sake.
100%.
But Wayne Rooney said of him, he would fit into any team. But he also sort of said, why would Newcastle sell him? And there was a marked change in tone from Eels and the last time he spoke around Newcastle's account, which was last January. He basically agreed. He basically said yes when asked if every player has a price under PSR. Now, at that point, as we now know, Newcastle were in a dreadful position. They were talking internally about the possibility of getting a 10-point points deduction through breaching PSR. That's what they were talking about. And there was a real sense of panic. And we know what happened. We know what happened in the summer. Chelsea made a call about Isak. That didn't go any further. There was, you know, Anthony Gordon and Liverpool. In the end, Newcastle, you know, did what they had to do, but they were very reluctant to do it, and it was a narrow escape. Now, this time, it was the most striking thing, I thought, in terms of this call. He was bullish in terms of how long Isak had on his contract. Let's be clear, he's got multi-years left, he said. But he then said, we'll have those discussions in terms of a new deal, just like we do with Jolinton, Bruno and Anthony Gordon. It's something we'll approach in the summer. He talked about it. He said it would be crazy for us to consider selling him. We've got an ambitious ownership that wants the best for the club. And he talked about a sense of annoyance at seeing that constant link with other clubs, as if Newcastle are a tier down from those other clubs. Now, in actual fact, they are a tier down from those clubs because they're not serial winners like PSG or Liverpool or Barcelona or, you know, whatever. They're not, you know, but that's where they want to get to, and they have a better chance of getting there keeping someone like Alexander Isak. And he kind of reiterated, we're not looking to move any player on. At some point, Newcastle have to sell. They will have to sell players to kind of reinvest that money, but they believe they've given themselves some headroom now. I thought that was really interesting, the change of tone from a year ago when it was almost as if Newcastle were kind of inviting offers for their best players simply because they knew what a dreadful position they were in.
Right then, boys, let's move on towards the end. Emails, inbox was quieter than the West Ham home end, but we did get one from Elle in Bristol, who, while a little bit tipsy, let's be honest, wrote a lot of nice things about us. We won't bore you with the details, but we are very grateful.
What do you mean? I haven't seen this email. If she says something nice about me, I absolutely specifically do want to hear it, and I want to hear it right now.
Okay. Is this going to be something we regret?
Ollie's seen the email. He gets to say that we don't need to bore you with the details. But if someone's...
Ollie, have you got the email handy?
Well, if someone is saying, George, you are great, just for example.
Just for an example off the top of your head, yeah.
Not only do I want to hear that myself, I want it to be shared with the rest of the world.
All right.
I need my confidence boosting up ahead of the cup final. Come on.
Is it long?
I don't want to read the whole thing out. Okay, so Ollie has now posted that in our running order, so we're looking in it now. No, there's nothing specific about me, so I think we can...
That's a shame, that, probably, isn't it, George?
We can probably
loads about Chris personally.
No, there isn't. I mean, there isn't. But thank you very much.
Like we said, we won't bore you with the details, but we are very grateful for the sentiment there. So thanks for sending that in. Right then, let's move on, chaps. Two podcasts in a week. It worked out so well the last time we did it. We're going to give it another shot, George. Cup final preview should be with you on Thursday evening, but give us a shout before Thursday lunchtime if you have any urgent questions for the gang or something you particularly want to get off your chest. Yes, cup final preview on Thursday, George. That should be fun, shouldn't it?
It will. As I say, I think we don't have to shake despair out of our limbs anymore.
No,
you know, we've done that. We did that last week.
I'm not saying I feel confident.
No. But I don't feel
quite as horrendous as what I did 5 days ago, I think.
I don't feel confident, but I feel hopeful.
Yeah.
And I think that's okay. I mean, I think that's all right. Look, if we can save this for Thursday,
but
like, if you go back to the Arsenal match, the 2-0 over Arsenal, I came out away from that thinking, Jesus, you know, it's like that was so good. And it's almost like Newcastle will take on Liverpool as equals. I don't think that's going to happen now. I think that's different. But I think we've drawn a line in the sand, and we can say after Monday that Newcastle should go to Wembley with hope. And why not? Why not?
Huzzah!
And I'm sure we'll get into all that on Thursday with Mr. Woff as well. Pod on the Tyne at theathletic.com if you've got anything you want to say, let us know. Thank you very much for your time, Jacob Whitehead.
Thank you. Been a pleasure.
Always. Thank you very much for your time, George Colgan.
Yeah, I'm just checking my emails just to make sure there's nothing from Newcastle saying that Alexander Isak is ruled out for the rest of the season.
We're good to go today. Thank you very much.
No, we're good to go.
Right,
we're good.
That's it. Thank you very much for listening. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, we hope you have a good week. Take care. We'll speak to you on Thursday. Bye bye.
It's all well and good doing that, but... Oh, sorry, I had a point. What was I going to end that point with? I'll restart that. I was get to that.
It was good. I enjoyed.
Sorry, that's embarrassing. That was it. Okay, right.
The Athletic FC Podcast Network.